Welcome back. The ballot for next month's presidential election in Egypt keeps shrinking. This week, Egypt's election commission disqualified another presidential candidate. That means at least 11 candidates have been barred from the voting. A final list of candidates who will be on the ballot is expected tomorrow. Journalist Thanasi Kambanis is following the story. We'll link you to his recent piece in The Atlantic at hereandnow.org. He joins us now. And Thanasi, welcome back to Here and Now.
Great to be with you, Sasha.
Thanasi, the candidate knocked off the ballot this week was Mubarak's prime minister during last year's uprising. Why was he disqualified?
His name was Ahmed Shafiq, and he was also a former Air Force general. He was knocked off in actually a somewhat democratic manner. The parliament passed a new law last week barring figures from the old Mubarak regime from running, and it was very quickly ratified and upheld by the courts, and so he was stricken because of his links to Mubarak. Now, the previous front runners who were kicked off the ballot last week were kicked off by the completely opaque and untransparent Presidential Elections Committee, whose decisions are subject to no appeal at all.
So describe that to us. That apparently is the government body that's making these decisions?
Yes,
who is on this body?
Well, we know some of the names, but they're basically anonymous bureaucrats on the Supreme Presidential Elections Commission. Their rules are somewhat derived from a fiat published a year ago by the ruling generals. So they have no real inherent legal authority, or at least they have a legal authority that's not really legitimate in the popular eye, and there's no appeals court, there's no Supreme Court that can question their decisions. What they did last week was they got rid of all three front runners, two Islamists and one very seedy old regime type, the man named Omar Suleiman, the former vice president who's also tied to the rendition program. And that decision pleased a lot of people for its results because it got rid of the most detested candidates, the most hardcore Islamist, the most popular Muslim Brotherhood leader, and this former regime figure. But few people have really stopped to consider the ramifications of the undemocratic process that's led to it so far.
Thanasi, sometimes when the Western press explains why people were disqualified from the Egypt ballot, it says there were technicalities. But of course, technicalities can be legitimate. Maybe someone didn't get the appropriate number of signatures or paperwork. Are these, in your view, legitimate, or are these weak excuses to knock people off the ballot you don't want on the ballot?
Well, the way I just described this to a colleague earlier today was a culture of fake rule of law, and that's how Egypt has been ruled forever. So essentially, there's a rule for everything, and therefore somebody is always breaking the rules one way or another. If you actually disqualify someone or throw them in prison in a different situation, you can almost always find a real legal justification. When it comes to these presidential candidates, they have to submit tens of thousands of signatures from a very specific mix of provinces around the country, and traditionally fake signatures or forged signatures are the way that people have been thrown out, even under Mubarak's regime. And that was the technicality that was used against one of the candidates. The other technicality was much more political and nefarious, was the real front runner, the Muslim Brotherhood Deputy Supreme Guide Khairat Shatter. He was thrown out because he had been convicted of a crime under Mubarak's regime, and that conviction was a completely political, trumped-up charge that was used against him because he was a dissident in the Mubarak era. So that is, again, technically correct. He was convicted, but he was also pardoned in the last few months, and that's a conviction that should have never happened in the first place.
So not the actions of a healthy emerging democracy.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, what we see here is a process that's really been overshadowed by the unaccountable machinations, first of all, of the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces, and secondly, and perhaps more disturbingly, by these legions of bureaucrats who wield a lot of power, and we really don't know what their motivations are. I mean, they could be working to serve the interests of the old regime. They could be working for their own political convictions. But one way or another, they really are controlling this process. And one thing that we can't underestimate the risk of is that this entire transition, the presidential election that's coming up next month, the parliament that took office in January, are all actually under threat by a court decision that could come any day, and a lot of people worry about this, that could invalidate the entire process of everything that's happened since last January because there's no basis in law for any of it. And if that happens, and it really there's legal reason that it should, we'd be right back to the day Mubarak resigned, and it's as if nothing had happened.
On the other hand, Thanasi, you've written that at least on the surface, the decision to get rid of some of these candidates will stop some serious shenanigans by the Muslim Brotherhood, the Islamic group. What kind of shenanigans do you mean?
I was referring to shenanigans in general, not just by the Brotherhood. The first and most disturbing one was actually Omar Suleiman, the former spy master, whose entry in the race really threw people in disarray and seemed like a revanchist plot by former regime elements. The second important group of shenanigans are those of the Brotherhood, who have really gone from being pragmatic and constrained to exhibiting a lot of autocratic tendencies and overreach in the last couple of months. A year ago, their position was they wanted to be the sort of holistic, inclusive, Mandela-like force in Egypt's transition. As of last month, they were contesting every office in the land, from president to prime minister, to dominating the constitution-writing convention and allowing no minority representation that was meaningful and no veto power against them. They are behaving very much like autocrats in making, and that kind of behavior is something that people were really aghast at, even people who support them, and the disqualification of their leading candidate was viewed as a sort of pruning back of the Brotherhood's most extreme tendencies.
Thanasi, of the candidates left in the presidential race, is there a clear front runner?
Yes, the front runner is probably Amr Moussa, who was the foreign minister under Mubarak and then the head of the Arab League. He's viewed in some quarters as a sort of secular nationalist bulwark against all the chaos and entropy of the transitional period. He's also, it should be noted, a fairly conservative former regime figure. He broke with Mubarak, but he's by no means a liberal reformer. He's a sort of old guard patrician who represents maybe its more restrained tendencies. And the other two frontrunners are both Islamists. One of them is the head of the Muslim Brotherhood's political party. His name is Mohamed Morsi, and he's quite a fire and brimstone sort of hardline Islamist. And the third contender is viewed as a bridge. He's a man named Abdelmonem Abou El Foutou. He's a former Brotherhood man, a doctor who tries to portray himself as a secular liberal Islamist.
That's journalist Thanasi Kambanis. There's a link to his work at hereandnow.org. And Thanasi, I understand you're working on a new book about the revolution in Egypt and the effort to build a new democracy there?
I am. I'm heading back on Tuesday to cover the presidential race.
Thanasi, thanks for making time to talk with us.
Great to be with you.
This is Here and Now.